and my dear brothers and sisters in the Lord Jesus Christ. Well, we come to Proverbs 28 then this morning, and as we've found so far, we believe that each of these chapters, remember, has, shall we say, a key idea that somehow binds it all together and makes sense of the narrative so that it can be seen as one harmonious whole. Now, we've suggested that chapter 28 is on the principles of how to show integrity. I want just to make a couple of opening comments on the spirit of this chapter before we move on to the verses that we will look at in particular. The first thing to notice about this particular chapter, Proverbs 28, is that it is different to the others in this respect, that the type of proverb changes. Now, see if you can see a key word in verse 1 that is also in verse 2. Well, I'll just keep telling you what verses it's in, and when you think you've got the verse, when you think you've got the word, rather, you can tell me. It's in verse 1, it's in verse 2. Yes, that's right. It's the but proverbs. So what we've got is a new type of proverb here. Such and such and so, but... And so now we've got things that are set, as it were, over against one another. It's quite unusual. It's found in this particular chapter over and over again. Antithetic parallelism. Parallelism, I think, is the official term. Now, what's being set over against one another in this chapter essentially is two basic ideas for life, described on the one side as that which is righteous and that which is upright. These are key words in the chapter. And on the other side, that which is wicked or perverse or evil. So these are the key words, you see. Remember how we've said that good Bible study is all about good Bible reading. We've got to find the key words. Well, they jump out of this chapter. You see verse 1, the wicked and the righteous. By the way, I think these are the verses that end the sections of this particular chapter. Verse 6, the upright and the perverse. Verse 12, the righteous and the wicked. Verse 18, the upright and the perverse. Verse 28, the wicked and the righteous. So these are key ideas, you see, all the way through this chapter. There's two ways, two points of view, two choices, two guiding principles being set forth before us here that we can follow. But the warning of the chapter is that these two choices will lead to two patterns of life and will ultimately build two different types of character and will ultimately bring two different ends. So it's terribly important that we choose the right way. So one way has to do with that which is wicked, that which is perverse, that which is evil, the key words. And the other has to do with that which is righteous, and there are two different words used for righteous in this chapter, and that which is upright. So I think the breakup to the chapter is as follows. The whole theme of the chapter is choosing the right one of those two paths. The whole theme is how to show integrity. Integrity is one of those words related to the righteous way, the upright way. And there are certain areas that a king particularly has to try and practice integrity. There are certain things in life where he needs to show integrity in his life. And here they are, verses 1 to 6. In seeking to uphold justice, because a king has all power, he can judge whatever he pleases, however he pleases. Actually, last night was a good example, wasn't it? It says that they took stones and they stoned Zechariah at the commandment of the king. This was unjust judgment, wasn't it? You see, the king's got the power to judge however he likes. How terribly important, therefore, that a king seeks to uphold justice according to the principle of integrity. One of the other things that kings have, and Solomon tells us all about this in Ecclesiastes, is that they have unlicensed, no, that's not quite right, let me think of the right word here. They have opportunity to satisfy whatever desire they may wish to have in life, don't they? A king has the opportunity to satisfy whatever desire he has. So one of the things that a king's got to be very careful of in terms of the principles of integrity, and this is, I think, the theme of verses 7 to 12, is trying to restrain desire. This is a particular challenge for a king. So easy for them to fulfill their ambitions in every way. There's integrity needed in these matters of life. Verses 7 to 12, trying to restrain desire. And another thing that's a particular challenge, you see, for a king, is ever admitting that he's wrong. Because he doesn't have to do that, does he, if he doesn't want to? He's all-powerful. He needs never admit that he's at fault if he wishes not to, and yet this is a matter so terribly important to the development of his character. And so I think verses 13 to 18 we may entitle Learning to Confess Sin. Learning to confess sin. This is all part of practicing those principles of righteousness in life. So important for a king, as well as for others. Seeking to uphold justice, trying to restrain desire, learning to confess sin, and finally, in verses 19 to 28, which is the longest section, striving to live uprightly. The king's got to realize that every day there will be challenges to the principles by which he lives. And he can either live by principles of wickedness or by principles of uprightness. The choice is his, but he must choose. So verses 19 to 28, striving to live uprightly. Now we're going to look at that last section, God willing, by way of study this morning. Verses 19 to 28, striving to live uprightly. What a challenge it is, and of course not just for kings, but for we ourselves in our own lives. Well, verse 19 starts this section by saying, he that tilleth his land shall have plenty of bread, but he that followeth after vain persons shall have poverty enough. If you come back to chapter 12 for a moment, into the 11th verse, we have what seems to be, in fact, a fairly similar proverb there. Slightly different and worthwhile noticing perhaps the difference. Proverbs chapter 28 says in verse 19, he that tilleth his land shall have plenty of bread, but he that followeth after vain persons shall have poverty. Chapter 12 and verse 11 says, he that tilleth his land shall be satisfied with bread, but he that follows vain persons is void of understanding. So you see, chapter 12 stresses the foolishness of pursuing empty dreams, whereas chapter 28 stresses the results of such folly. It will inevitably lead to poverty, says chapter 28. By the way, you'll notice that in both cases, I think in both cases, yes, the word persons is in italics. It really shouldn't be there, should it? It's not that they follow vain persons so much as a vain idea of life here. So the Revised Standard Version says worthless pursuits. The NIV says fantasies. The New King James Version says frivolity. Rotherham says empty heads. It's not that they're following specifically another person, but they're following vain ideas. Well, this proverb says it's not a good idea to do that at all. In chapter 12 it's folly, and in chapter 28 here it leads to poverty. Now you see, the principle of verse 19 is really the principle of Eden, isn't it? Chapter 3 verse 19. Genesis 3 verse 19. This is the principle from Eden. Now, could anyone quote that to me without turning up Genesis chapter 3? Out of the store banks of memory. The principle of this verse. You would like to have a go? Yes, I think that's acceptable. Very. Very acceptable. And quoted from the Authorized Version as well, how splendid it is. So the principle established right back in the days of Genesis is this. Now, by the way, I'm going to give you a little sort of a little phrase that I think goes with all these verses, and that's this: true gain. These verses are all about true gain. It's all about learning to live uprightly, but out of that comes true gain. If we can find the right principle to live by, there's real benefit here. So true gain in this verse, the principle is that true gain is achieved by steady, regular diligence, not by pursuing worthless dreams and frittering away time on vain ideas. There's no point in dreaming in life about sudden wealth in any sphere. The instant coffee solution and the hope of sudden riches is all part of the society in which we live today. It's not true, says the proverb. True wealth is not accrued in this way. It comes by tillage. It comes by the steady cycle of proper labor on one's own ground or area of responsibility. You can't suddenly become spiritually minded overnight, instantly. It doesn't work like that. You can't have happy marriages and wonderful children that grow up straight and true automatically, like pressing a button. True gain comes from patient labor, not by pursuing worthless promises of instant gratification. And I think that's a good principle, isn't it, for all of us to learn, because we live in a get-rich-quick society. And it's not true, says the proverb. In fact, look what it's like, verse 20. Some people are so desirous to get rich quick that, well, they tend to sort of cut corners a little bit in terms of this whole business of living uprightly, don't they? Verse 20, a faithful man shall abound with blessings, but he that maketh haste to be rich shall not be innocent. So here we've got a proverb, you see, that contrasts he that's faithful with he that hasteth to be rich, the reward of the one and the punishment of the other. Now the faithful man of verse 20, Rotherhams calls him a man of fidelity. Moffat says he's trustworthy. Young's literal says he's steadfast. And so, you see, the implication of verse 20 is that the faithful are true to their words. They fulfill their promises. They hold to their conscience. And by implication, therefore, the person who hastes to be rich in this chapter is the one who, in their desire to obtain what they think is gain, they are prepared to break principle and to corrupt their own integrity in the rush for wealth. They're happy to resort to dishonesty and deceit. And the verse says that in the end it'll rebound upon them, because when it says he shall not be innocent, most other translations say he will not go unpunished. It's a bit like our own proverb, dishonesty never pays. So you see, his own haste for gain leads to his own eventual undoing. So what's the principle of the verse? The principle is that true gain is the result always of honest endeavor, not deceitful practice. We need to think about that in terms of the life and times in which we live. We live in a world where principles of integrity are cast away easily, quickly, aren't they? It's so easy to cut corners, just a little bit. The proverb says, no, you don't do that. That's not how true gain comes. True gain only ever comes by being absolutely faithful to one's own principles in life. You don't ever cut corners. I am Yahweh and I change not, says Malachi. God's principles are never compromised. They're never changed. They're never lowered. They're never chopped off at the corners. So we shouldn't be like that either. Verse 21 says, to have respect of persons is not good. For a piece of bread that man will transgress. If you come back to chapter 18, again we have a similar sort of idea in an earlier proverb, but with some slight difference. Proverbs 18 and verse 5. It sort of sounds the same, but it's not quite right. It says in Proverbs 18, verse 5, it's not good to accept the person of the wicked, to overthrow the righteous in judgment. Now you see, the emphasis on Proverbs, in Proverbs 18 and verse 5, is really on the injustice that is done to the defendant, isn't it? The emphasis is on the injustice done to the defendant. But that's not the emphasis here in chapter 28, verse 21, is it? The emphasis here is on the corruption of the judge. To have respect of persons is not good, and for a piece of bread, that man will transgress. But the man of the verse is the man judging, and he shows partiality. He's the person who's able to exercise authority. Now we know what the law said. The law said, didn't it? Leviticus 19, verse 15, Deuteronomy 16, verses 18 to 20, judges were never ever allowed to receive gifts or bribes. Why? Why should they never receive gifts or bribes? Because it would compromise their impartiality as a judge. Now, you see, what's happened in this verse is this judge has shown partiality by being either unreasonably harsh on a poor person, or perhaps on a stranger whom he doesn't know, or unreasonably lenient on a rich person, or perhaps on a relative or somebody he does know. And the transgression of the verse is that this bias will be shown where it is to the judge's benefit. You see, this judge is out for what he thinks is gain. And you see what the verse is saying? That some people will compromise their principles for the smallest advantage. For just a piece of bread they'll do this, says the proverb. So the principle of the verse is that true gain is never achieved by compromising truth or by showing partiality in life. You know, we need to think about these principles, because there's lots of times in life where we all find that we're in the position of judge of other men's thoughts, judge of other people's motives, judge of other episodes in life. And we all have the opportunity to either uphold the integrity of not compromising truth, or perhaps for a little piece of bread to just lean a little this way, perhaps. We shouldn't be like that, should we? That's not the divine principle. Verse 22, he that hasteth to be rich hath an evil eye, and considereth not that poverty shall come upon them. You see how the margin, well, at least in the authorized version, you see how the margin reverses the first part of this proverb. Instead of he that hasteth to be rich hath an evil eye, he that hath an evil eye hasteth to be rich. So of course the question is, what's the evil eye? Well, let's come back a few chapters and compare another type of eye. Proverbs 22 and verse 9. Let's work out this evil eye business here. So what's the evil eye of the one who hastes to be rich in Proverbs 28? Well, in Proverbs 22 and verse 9, it says, he that hath a bountiful eye. Now you see what the margin says. He that has a good eye. So what is a good eye? And the answer is, a good eye is the eye of the man or the woman who is generous in spirit. So if a good eye is the spirit of generosity, then what's a bad eye or an evil eye? And the answer is, well, that which is the opposite to generosity, the spirit of miserliness. Now, if you come to the next chapter, I think that explains a little proverb in chapter 23, you see, doesn't it? Someone was talking about this the other day. You see verse 6 of Proverbs 23. Eat thou not the bread of him that hath an evil eye, neither desire thou his dainty meats. For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, saith he to thee, but his heart is not with thee. Now, you see, that suddenly makes sense now, doesn't it? Because if the evil eye is that he has a grudging spirit of miserliness, the proverb says you better be careful not to eat all his dainties. Because, you see, when you're in his house, he says, oh, eat up, eat up. But, you know, every time you take a mouthful, he says, that's my food you're eating, in his heart. He's got an evil eye. He hates seeing you do this. He can't stand seeing his jolly good food disappearing down your gullet. He's got an evil eye. So you see, this is the spirit of the person. Well, you know what other translations have for that person in chapter 28 here in verse 22. He that has an evil eye. Revised Standard Version says miserly man. Moffat says selfish man. NIV says stingy man. So you see, here's the spirit of those who hoard their possessions. They become selfish in the process of amassing wealth, seeking gain. See, this is what it's all about, isn't it? Seeking gain. But the real challenge of these verses is, what's true gain? What's real gain? Now, come and have a look at Ecclesiastes chapter 4, because here's the miser, you see. Here's the spirit of the miser in Ecclesiastes chapter 4. The one with the evil eye. What an unhappy creature he is, to be sure. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse 8 says, so here's the man of Proverbs 28 verse 22 really. There is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child, nor brother. Yet there's no end of all his labour, neither is his eye satisfied with riches. Neither saith he, for whom do I labour and bereave my soul of good? This also is vanity, yea, it is sore travail. You see, this is the miser who lives alone. He ends up alone because he really can't trust anybody else, because he's got such a lot of wealth, and he doesn't really want to share it with anyone. So he doesn't acknowledge his family, he's cut them off, he's got no brothers. I don't have a brother. I might have to leave some of my money to him. I'd be best to disassociate myself from my family so that I can preserve my wealth. And if that's the case, then it would be rather a good idea if I never ever have children, because I'd have to give it to them too. So there's one alone, not a second, no child, no brother. He lives by himself so that he can accumulate his wealth. And the funny thing about this verse is that somehow he's never satisfied, is he? The evil eye wants more and more and more. Now come back to Proverbs, chapter 28 and verse 22, and let's just see the end of that spirit. How classic this is for the age in which we live. Isn't this the spirit of the age in which we live? Getting more, accumulating more, having more. Well, you see, what this proverb says is, he that has the miserly eye and that hastes to be rich considers not that poverty shall come upon him. He's unaware that poverty is coming upon him. You know why that is? Well, you see, I think it is not necessarily that he loses all his wealth, although that's possible. But you see, the miser, living all by himself in his mansion with all his wealth, is poor, isn't he? Because you see, what that spirit does, you see, here's the person, it's the person who shuts off friendship, is suspicious of happiness, queries anything that involves giving. You see, in the end, it blights their life because they're miserly, not just with their money, but everything else. This is the person that becomes miserly with praise to others. This is the person that's grudging and acknowledging the good work or the kindness of another. This is one who's a little bit wary of ever depleting their own stock or reputation. And so in the end they have no friends, do they? They're poor people, really. And their life's not happy. There's actually poverty on every hand. Poverty of friendship, poverty of happiness, poverty of health. Poverty of the future, poverty of family, poverty of love. And yet they thought they were getting gain. called a paradox, you see, isn't it? So the lesson of the verse is that true gain is never achieved by a miserly, ungenerous spirit that does not care for others. It never actually brings true gain, funnily enough, although that's not what the world would teach us. Verse 23 says, now this is interesting, he that rebuketh a man afterwards shall find more favour than he that flattereth with the tongue. So you see, here now we have the ultimate effect of rebuke and flattery compared the one with the other. So what does flattery do? What exactly does flattery do? Well, you see, flattery either justifies an existing state of sin or provides enticement to walk in a new path of wickedness. Whereas what rebuke does is it challenges error and stimulates a change to walk in righteousness. Now, of course, the verse presupposes something here, doesn't it? It presupposes, firstly, that the rebuke is given in the right spirit. That's always important. And also that it is received in the right way. It assumes that the recipient is righteous. But you'll notice that the focus of this proverb is not on the receiver of the rebuke, but on the giver, isn't it? He that rebuketh shall find favour. Now, why does the person who gives the rebuke, why is it that he finds favour in this verse? And the answer is, because the words of a just rebuke, if they're rightly administered and rightly taken, bring lasting benefit in life, don't they? Lasting benefit. So you see how really that beautifully fits the principle of this section, doesn't it? That you see, true gain is not always obtained in pleasant circumstances. That which may seem initially unwelcome, but which is ultimately beneficial, is always appreciated by the righteous as true gain in the development of their character. And they see rebuke in that light also. That to them, because rebuke improves and purifies, they believe that to be true gain in the development of their lives before the Father. True gain is associated with things of lasting benefit, not temporary value. Verse 24 says, whoso robbeth his father or his mother and saith, it is no transgression, the same is the companion of a destroyer. So you see what verse 24 says. The emphasis isn't just on the fact that this person robs their parents. It's also in the fact that they claim that no sin is involved. They say there's no transgression here. Not just that they've done this wicked thing, but that they claim that they are free from error in the process. Robbery of a stranger is evil. How much worse must it be to rob one's parents? Now, let's have a look at the divine principle firstly. In the 1st of Timothy chapter 5, which of course has been part of Brother David's studies, this principle, which we've already seen in his studies, is enunciated. The principle of care for parents, the responsibility of care for parents. It's a divine principle. Now you see what the 1st of Timothy 5 says, and verse 8 for connection. If any provide not for his own,